Welcome to the Eurospace Hub special episode from the podcast Business of Collaboration. Eurospace Hub aims to digitally connect the space ecosystem in Europe, from tech transfer offices to industry, space accelerator networks, research centers, and other universities. Eurospace Hub will allow these actors to easily connect with financial opportunities from the Horizon Europe framework to space research, space technology, and to accelerator programs. Eurospace Hub will bridge the gap between academic institutions and industry using a collaborative ecosystem and entrepreneurial mindset inside the universities and beyond. Every month, with the Eurospace Hub special episodes, we want to share stories about space technology and research with you. Enjoy the conversation. Today, your host is Jara Pascual, founder and CEO of CollabWith. Our guest is Walter Peters, Vice Dean of Innovation at the International Space University, ex-ESA Head of Astronauts, inventor of the concept Space Marketing and New Space Economy with his books. Besides, he created the space incubators inside the ISU, the International Space University. He's talking about how values of respect for collaboration are important, how to be inclusive, and how to create an incubator for space technology successfully. Enjoy the conversation. Welcome, Walter Peters, to the podcast Business of Collaboration, a special edition of the Eurospace Hub.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you very much.
Walter, you are professor of the Space Business Management at the International Space University.
That's correct, yes, already since a few years.
You have created the International Space University Incubator.
That's an interesting story. We saw over the last few years that the profile of our students was changing. 20 years ago, when we had students coming, most of them came to have a career in the agencies or in very big organizations. And let's say from the year 2010 onwards, that is a little bit linked to our famous friend Elon Musk, people started to realize that if you had good ideas, you could also have equity and do the idea yourself. You didn't have to work for a big company. And our students were starting to say, well, where do I find training to become an entrepreneur? So we changed a little bit the curriculum, brought more and more entrepreneurial-oriented elements in the curriculum. So, for instance, one of the things which I did was a business plan, an exercise of 2 weeks. So the students are developing a business plan, and then they go in front of a jury. And then that question came afterwards, of course, now I have a very interesting business plan, but what do I do with it? If I go to most of the standard incubators, if I may call it like that, they don't know enough about space, and I don't find a space-specific incubator. And that raised for me the idea to talk with the local community or with the local stakeholders who are interested in having an ecosystem in Strasbourg of space, because they had already acquired the International Space University, so they wanted to go further and said, can we not go one step further? So that's how I negotiated with them to give me place in our building. Also, they helped us with the furniture, the accommodation, and the whole thing. And that's where we started to have the first companies in the incubator. To some more successful, a little bit selective. One thing I must say is that we don't want to compete with very good other incubators. So our more than preference, virtually our prerequisite, is that the business plan has to be linked to a space application. And I'm saying on topic, on purpose of space application, because in space we make this difference between upstream and downstream. Upstream is not so much the area that the local authorities and that we are interested in. It's interesting, but then you have to go to Toulouse, where in France, for instance, where there is much more, or to Barcelona or to other countries. So we were pushing the people to say, listen, you can do with relatively low means with a relatively low, what we call CAPEX, that is capital expenditure, with a very low capital expense, if you take existing data, which are relatively easy to find, you put them together in a very small way, in an algorithm, and without a very big investment, you can have a nice space application. I have architects who just use Google Maps and the wind and the temperature curves. And on the basis of that, you just give your address. They will tell you what is the best way to have your house heated. Just on, with standard applications, standard thing. So that's how that incubator started. There were a few ones where after a certain while, we had to say, listen, take my advice. Your proof of concept is not working. Proof of concept is that you ask the person to check with potential customers, is this something that would work? Some cases didn't work, and then we also advised them to stop it. But we had a few very good successes. We recently had one company that left with 40 people, and they started with 2 people 2 years ago. So with a very interesting round of financing. So you win and you lose. Sometimes you have something that you say, that is really a success number. I like to look back to it. Some things are very interesting. That's also, at the moment, I have a company, which I like very much personally, who is looking at gardens on roofs. And it's clever what the lady is doing. She's checking which roofs are very good to have a garden on. There's a number of parameters, which wind and the temperature and the shadow, of course. If the roof is not in the shadow. And by the way, as a little interesting story, she was telling me about the toolkit that she used for Earth observation and GIS, and very knowledgeable. I said, did you have a training in GIS? She said, no, I have a master's degree in international relations. And that's also something very new, that at the moment, the tools are there. I always compare it. In the past, when I was young and you bought a computer, you had to learn programming, or the computer was useless. Now all the programming is done for you by the operating systems. So at the moment, you can do something in the space sector without having to be a space engineer. That's the sort of people that we like to see, because we can help them on what they want to do. So that's the story of our incubator.
And who can join the ICU, so the International Space University Incubator?
Exactly. As I said before, important for us is that it is a space application. If somebody says, I have an idea for a better pizza, then you go to a business incubator, which are probably good to help you. This is not our trade. So the people that we love to see are people that really have a very good idea on space applications, where we know that we can help them. So it can be irrespective of nationality, irrespective of background, for sure. The only thing that is a little bit of a factor that is in every country, they have to register in the area, because the area is investing in order to build up an ecosystem. So they hope on the long term that there is a return on investment via taxes, via people employed, and so they have to register a company there.
So, but it has not to be a student at the university. Could be anyone.
Could be anybody. It could be.
So, a 50-year-old woman who has idea, like, has to register in the Strasbourg area, is enough.
That's enough. At the moment, I have somebody who made his career in the Air Force. And as a pilot, you know, pilots in the Air Force have to stop at a relatively young age. They normally say that after 42 years, you, as a fighter pilot, your eyes are going down and you better stop. And some continue to have a desk job in the Air Force, but some say, okay, no, thank you. I had my 20 years Air Force career. I don't know. I think he's older than 50, by the way. But he has done a complete Air Force career and has now an idea how to use drones for agricultural surveillance. So he's looking at vineyards. And is then advising in that area, you have to use that and that material. In that area, don't use too much. So he's helping farmers, but it's with drones. But that doesn't matter. He's combining drones with a navigation system. So that's fine for us.
Walter, you have written books as well, and you were vice dean of the International Space University, and you were working at the ESA, European Space Agency, before as a head of astronauts. So you have a very multicultural, colorful background. So what are the books about? How was your work at ESA? How is your responsibility as a vice dean?
So you have to know that I have a double education. So I'm an engineer and I'm an economist. So in ESA, I have always worked in these areas between engineering and economy, which put me in a very good position. Because if an engineer asked me a question, I said, I'm only an economist. And if an economist asked me a question, I said, I'm only an engineer. So I've always been able to have a very, very good life there. But at a certain moment, I was then indeed, as you said, Jara, very correct. I was given the responsibility about selecting and helping astronauts. Now, one of the things I introduced is an astronaut is always asked the same question. Is it worth so much money to on human spaceflight and so on? So I started to give some courses to the astronauts on spin-offs. What is the importance of space? Why? And that sort of thing. And it started more and more to research to give them a very... At a certain moment, I had so much material that I took a sabbatical year from ESA. And I wrote a book on... The only book, by the way, on space marketing. So that's the only book at the moment still in the land of the blind. The one with the one eye wrote the best book. So then this whole... new space came up, and that also interested me because I still personally think that new space is a paradigm shift. Some people say new space is just a little bit like in the old days commercial space. That's not true. New space is completely different. It are young people with brilliant ideas who are looking for equity, who are trying to do the things simpler, faster, cheaper. For me, new space, if I maybe sounds a bit philosophical, it's not really like the democratization of space. People who can come into the sector, also from emerging countries, by the way, which in the past had no chance. So I wrote a few books. I gave a definition of new space, which is still taken as the definition at the moment. And I'm continuing to publish in that area. So it is an accumulation with my years of experience in ESA, in different projects, and with mixed with my background between engineering and economy.
If you want to be part of the European space innovation ecosystem in a digital format, go to our website to read more information about how to join. www.eurospacehub.com.
I am still processing all this information. Yeah, this is super interesting because as the new economy, sometimes we can get, okay, what does it mean? It's a startups only, you know? It's affecting research. It's affecting how we are using applications based on space technology. Could be satellite, but could be more robotics as well. And how we are setting up all the living of astronauts in the international space. So this is creating the new level and the new layer of the space and aviation ecosystem?
Yes, in my opinion, yes. I would give it another, I would not say a definition. For me, the new space economy is people who are having a completely different design philosophy. The people who came out of the space sector, like me, we were used to put everything with redundancies. We put on top of this, that, a few kilograms there. So our satellites at the end became extremely heavy. If they are heavy, they are also very expensive to launch. What do the new space economy people say? No, I'm not making these heavy satellites anymore. I'm going to make very simple satellites, make a constellation of satellites, a few ones like for Internet of Things, like Australian company Fleet, also, by the way, alumna from ISU. And with a combination of a few satellites, I can virtually do the same as with an enormously heavy satellite that if something goes wrong at the launch, I lose it. If I lose a little satellite in a rideshare, what we call this means you put a satellite on in addition to a main satellite. So they are reducing the risk. They are making things simpler. They don't live so long. They don't do the same protection. They don't. The satellites are not living that long, but technology is also changing very fast. So I know a number of people, like the other alumni of mine, Spire. They just say, if my satellite lives 4 years, that's okay. Because after 4 years, I probably don't need it. You don't need a geostationary satellite of 15 years anymore. By the time it comes after 7 or 8 years, it probably, the band has changed or the frequency, it's obsolete virtually. You don't need it anymore. So new space is more taking a business risk and do it in a way that your space project is so light that also the launch cost is lighter. And that is the difference where we have now the skills of entrepreneurship. You are looking for an equity investor, business angel, venture capital. So you have to also be able to talk to these people, which if you're talking into a big space company without giving it a name, these are other people who do it. But in new space, you have to have the skills to be able to talk to a financier, to an investor. And you have to be able to negotiate with an investor. That is the value of my company. That's the future value of my company. I need a round A of so many million. And for that, I'm giving you so much percentage. You have to be able to negotiate that, which if you work in a big company, you don't need to. So they need other skills, which we are trying to provide them.
Yeah, as well as skills to be able to sell and to be able to create a company, yeah, to lead their employees, to lead their partners.
It is true, very true. And that's where it also sometimes goes wrong. Very often I've seen people who are brilliant, who had a brilliant idea. I cannot say what is the right figure. I know one company who once called for my help. The person was very idealistic and thought that by talking to his staff in the morning and then saying what had to happen, that the company would run like that. He said that worked until we were 12. And then it started to become difficult. So I need a structure. He didn't have a structure. He didn't believe in any hierarchical structure. He thought that we work with a number of friends and that will work. So that step between 5, 6, 7 people, 10 people, and then going, scaling up, as we call it, to a company of 40, 50 people, that needs other skills. And I have advised already some people, merge or ask somebody to take over your company and negotiate the CTO function. Because very often these people are fantastic CTOs, but not always good CEOs. There is a difference. You know the famous saying maybe that if you promote a fantastic engineer, you lose twice. You lose a good engineer and you get a bad manager.
That's a discussion we have always. Coming from engineering background, when you are becoming more a manager or director, you have this question. Okay, when you are a director of an engineering team, you have to understand your team. So you have to have this knowledge of engineering. You cannot bring someone from an MBA and put to manage an engineering group. But as well, you have to have these leadership skills to be able to manage the people.
Many of the good engineers make a very good technical director. But if you are a manager, if you're of a company, you have to make decisions which are maybe not the technical decision what you like personally. So if you are over-engineered, you may want to mix up too much in the details, which you should lead to the others. And that's where it often goes wrong. The technical people do not want the boss to correct their calculations. And I've seen it happening. And that's where a company sometimes goes wrong. Yeah, that's correct.
I have in this new space economy, I have this question. The old space economy, at the end, are the customers of this new space economy? Or how do you see who are the customers of the new space entrepreneurs, startups, SMEs, research, at the end, ecosystem?
First of all, I prefer, maybe a question of age, but I prefer to say traditional space and not old space. No, not 100%. I think there are a number of niche products which a big space company has too much overheads so that they cannot do it themselves because it's not profitable or the market is too small. So they would rather outsource or they would rather give it to another company who says, listen, this I give you one example. One of the very big constellations at the moment, the person doesn't want to care about cybersecurity. So we asked somebody else to look at cybersecurity. He says, it's not my area. Can you look at cybersecurity for my thing? So niche products, big companies cannot do it. They cannot do it. They have too much overhead. Maybe some other areas where they say, I don't want to develop a whole new department on that. I don't need them for maybe in 3 or 4 years anymore. I'm just going to look for a little creative startup.
What do you think about the Elon Musk SpaceX was doing a revolution as well in terms of sustainability, as well reusing all the parts of the satellites, but as well he is now doing the satellites with the same mindset. And he changed, like you mentioned before, Elon Musk inspired to become like a space entrepreneur. Like this is possible. He opens the door. It's possible to become a space engineer, even if you have no idea about space.
Yeah. Yes. Well, he studied physics, so he's not 100% thing, but it's true. He has no space education. But we've seen it with cars. We've seen it with other projects. The person is simply brilliant and can virtually tackle every area. That's one thing. But what he did for the space world, in my personal opinion, is that he broke so many paradigms, things that people said that is not possible. Remember how the traditional space people looked at him when he said, I'm going to bring the boosters back. Everybody said, oh, come on, we in NASA, we tried that since 20 years and it's not possible. He demonstrated it. And one of the reasons is that if you get into a well-established organization, even a government organization or a company, you get a certain design philosophy. And that is something that people underestimate. You do things already always the same way. When I was a young engineer, I was responsible to building a solar simulator. And because there was a lot of optics, we gave the solar simulator design to a company, which is called Carl Zeiss, a very famous company. So the first time they showed me their plans. I said, this looks like a telescope. What do you want, says the guy. I'm already 30 years making telescopes. It is just in my blood. So the whole thing looked like a telescope. And that can be a bit anecdotic, but you cannot simply ask somebody who works for a very big company who has made these geostationary, very big satellites. You cannot ask him to make a small sat. It is not in his way of thinking on doing something efficient, low cost. It's not in his way of thinking. So that's, I think, the big trigger, in my opinion, 2010. Elon Musk showed that you can do things even if the traditional space sector says they cannot be done. And I think that triggered a lot of people saying, I'm also going to try something. I also have an idea. I'm not going to go and work for a big company where they say that will not work. I have an idea and I want to do that idea. So I'm going to look for equity investors and do it myself. Because it has been proven by Elon Musk that it's possible.
What does the space industry and research need? What are the main directions where space is going?
There are a number of areas which we are lacking, in my personal opinion. We all know the story about active space debris removal. We don't do research enough on that. In orbit servicing, we are playing enormous risky games by having no capacity at the moment to, if something comes down, like to the Earth. We're trying a few things, but we are not able to deviate that object. So there are a number of people who made calculations which are scary. This we certainly have to do something about it. We do a few tests, but you can also say, well, let's be a bit philosophical. There is a risk that something falls on the Earth. So shouldn't we go somewhere else with part of the people and go to Mars and at least have a hopefully better world on another planet? But at least the risk is spread that humanity is not going to disappear in case there is something from 10, 12 kilometers diameter. It's not much. 10, 12 kilometers diameter can have the whole Earth wiped out, all life on Earth wiped out. So isn't it justified that we spend a little bit more like an insurance for humanity and go, for instance, to Mars to have part of us, a little part of the humanity with the knowledge that we have settling on Mars? I think we are delaying that too much at the moment.
What are the main challenges the industry is facing?
At the moment, you're talking about space industry, I guess, yeah? At the moment, I think there are so many problems on Earth. We should not underestimate. You look at the geopolitical issues that we have, all the tensions. You look at the energy problems, you look at pollution, you look at climate change. I think the problem with the space industry is that people have certain doubts if that is the priority at the moment. And we have to be very honest, there are challenges. But these sort of challenges, my personal opinion, they will be solved. The long term, if we're now not advancing in the space sector, like going to Mars, that will not be solved. So we're losing time. So we have to find probably a solution with the politicians and with the general public to say, okay, we have to solve these climate change problems. We have to solve that. But we should not forget that we need something for the next 20, 30 years as well. And that vision I find a little bit lacking.
You are listening to a Eurospace Hub special episode from the podcast Business of Collaboration.
Now we are talking about the Eurospace Hub. What is for you Eurospace Hub? And what is your role in the first 2 years of this project / platform?
Okay, so there are two questions. What is it? For me, it's a big facilitator to bring a number of communities closer together, research, students, academia. That's the beauty of the project. What we think we can contribute from the perspective of the International Space University as one of the partners is that we have quite a good understanding what an engineer, in particular, what an engineer needs as additional skills. And I'm talking about non-engineering hard skills, like knowledge about finance, knowledge about management. But I'm also talking about soft skills, which are in general not trained. And so if you want to manage that, you can convince an investor to invest in your company, you need some soft skills. Figures is one thing, but you also have to convince the person in the meeting. So what we are hoping to, in what way, we don't know yet. So as at this phase, we just did a sort of analysis with our partners on what are the needs of the future sector. And what we're hoping to do is then to develop a program which can be an add-on to a classical technical education, like an engineering school, to make these people ready to step into the entrepreneurial new space world.
The Eurospace Hub is an innovation ecosystem. So what is innovation for you?
Innovation for me, well, it's not automatically doing the things as you did them before, but being open to do them in a different way.
And what is collaboration for innovation?
We should not underestimate that if you take people from the same university, they are the same training, they have the same professors, and they think the same. There is a French expression, "Le choc des idées jaillit la lumière." If you translate that, it's only when you have different ideas coming together and collaborating that suddenly you get new ideas, you get innovation. So collaboration and innovation for me means that we have to stimulate and encourage that people with different backgrounds, with different educational backgrounds, are able to talk to each other, sit around the table, and the end product, we talked before about ESA. I've seen that happening in ESA. One of the strengths of ESA is that you sit around the table with 8 or 9 nationalities, people with a completely different background. I mean, educational background, even if they are all 8 engineers. One comes from the UPC in Catalonia, the other one comes from SUPAIRO, the other one comes from Delft. These 8 people will come up with better ideas than 8 engineers from one university. So collaboration, bring the people together, teach them how to talk to each other, also with soft skills, because we have to we have to be aware there are intercultural differences. Some come in time, some come too late, and then the other ones are very upset that the other ones are too late. There are cultural differences, forget it, work them out. Can be even in body language. Body language, in particular, with completely different nations who are not used to work with things. I mean, Japanese or Chinese or Asian, we have to start accepting that and sitting together around the table with these different cultures, with these different disciplines, with these different things. And that end product is guaranteed going to be better than we have now with monocultural people.
Amen. The point here, I think, is that respect, to include this culture of values of respect, listening to each other, respecting opinions, don't stereotyping. Yeah.
I've seen it. I was in a project called Hermes. So the Germans came in, the Spanish and the Italians were too late. So the Germans got upset. No respect. They went out. Then the Germans and the Italians came in. Then the Italians and the Spanish came. Where are the Germans? Oh, they left already. At the end, we found a sort of modus operandi to come all a little bit too late. The respect is a correct thing. This is more an anecdotic thing, but it is true.
But as well, what does it mean, respect for you? He's talking about, I need you respect me when you are on time. And the other is like, you respect me if you are waiting for me. I think these discussions of what does it mean the values for every country different is to have a conversation and then the collaboration is better.
I think respect, the minimum of respect for me is that at least you accept that people are, I tell all my students one thing, different is not wrong. You have to accept that there are differences and not overreact about the differences. And if you accept the differences, even if you do not 100% like them, like somebody sitting at a table and eating in a very strange way, if it's not in accordance with your culture, accept it and try to look over it. Don't get upset. So respect is, to a certain extent, accepting other cultures.
Now we have the easy, quick questions about you, Walter. Coffee or tea? Which kind of breakfast do you have in the morning?
Not much, but with coffee. That I must say, but for the rest, I wouldn't mind an egg. I'm not that thing. I must also say I have to be a little bit careful because I try to eat gluten-free, by the way. I'm not saying that I'm living healthy, not at all. But my breakfast is relatively light. I'm not somebody that, like in other cultures, where the breakfast is the most important thing, but we're not very healthy, I think. No, but so certainly coffee. Thank you. A double espresso is even better.
So what is your favorite place for holidays?
My favorite place for holidays? Italy. I'm not saying it because there are Italians here. For me, the combination of the countryside, the culture, the food, I find it one of the better places in the world. I mean, there are other things where maybe the landscape is nicer than in Toscana or something like that. Well, food, very difficult to beat, maybe by France. But if you take the combination in one place where all of that is, then I would say Italy.
And if you would like to recommend a book, which book you would like to recommend to our audience, you know, like space lovers, dreamers, space rookers, entrepreneurs?
I'm going to disappoint you on that. If I read a book and everybody's doing what they want, I'm already trying to make some articles and trying to teach students. So I go for relatively historical light books, like from Ken Follett, things like that. I cannot tell you that I'm reading every evening Stephen Hawking or something.
Well, you are doing for work. Well, thank you very much, Walter Peters. It was an incredible experience to interview you.
It was a pleasure. Thank you very much, Ara. Thank you.
Yeah, welcome.
Thank you for listening to our Eurospace Hub special episode from the podcast Business of Collaboration. Please share this podcast with your space friends and leave comments on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, or on Stitcher. See you next month for another story and interview. In the meantime, you can learn more about us on www.eurospacehub.com.